Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast, I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in new basement studios by the lake, we're doing an artificial intelligence show.
Well,
and so don't, no jokes out there about artificial intelligence.
Well, that's we'll talk about artificial intelligence or robots or androids or something like that. But we'll get around to like trying to figure out what it really is we're talking about.
Because basically,
maybe we don't know yet.
Yeah, because basically the hottest TV show of the fall right now, and I think this is the case on both sides of the Atlantic because it airs on Sky Atlantic, I think, back in the UK,
okay,
is Westworld. Because even my mother
on HBO here,
on HBO here, even my mother, bless her, texted me to go. Westworld is out. Have you read any reviews? And I don't think
when she says that, does she mean she's watching it, and so she, or she's saying like, tell me all about it so I can decide whether I want to watch it?
Yeah, I think I couldn't decide. And when she first texted me, I actually hadn't yet seen it, so I just sort of said something along the lines of, "Yeah, reviews are good. Give it a go." And then just because I wanted to end the conversation, I wanted to end that text chat communication because it was going nowhere. But like I said, it's on HBO here. And so I've been able to watch it for the first time in my life.
Yeah. So for what it's worth, just so people know, it's based on Michael Crichton
film
screenplay. Like there was a film in 1973.
Yeah.
Which, you know, so we were just speaking to somebody about this and they were like, Michael Crichton, I haven't read a book about this. And they just assumed it would be a book property, but it was something where Michael Crichton tried to do it as a screenplay straight to movie. So there is no book.
He had a chance, you know, and it was his screenplay, and he was given the chance, I think, by MGM to direct it himself,
right,
to enable him to get into directing films. Although people don't realize, Michael Crichton's a trained doctor, or he was a trained doctor.
Yeah.
Because he was also one of the creators of ER.
Stayed at a Holiday Inn Express.
Oh, yeah. So he was doctor, writer, film director. He's pretty much a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, the original Westworld, the film, as everyone says, it's similar to Jurassic Park, which he wrote, which was a novel he wrote nearly 20 years later, about theme parks gone wrong.
Yeah, right.
Which is what Westworld was. But Westworld, without getting too deep into the movie, is about a theme park full of robots where the likes of you and I can show up and have experiences in either the Old West. I think there was ancient Rome, and then there was a medieval times.
Yeah, I don't know if that sort of. So what we don't know in the new show, so in the old movie, they called it Westworld, but it was some amusement park where you could go to three different directions.
Yes.
People traveled in it. So I watched the first. They just ran the movie on Sci-Fi, and it has a very schlocky early 70s sci-fi look to it. Like, you know, just visually, it's a little like, it made me think of the original Logan's Run.
Yeah, what's that era? Early 70s.
That was sort of like the set seemed a little cardboard.
And yeah.
Like, I don't know, you know, a lot of unitards or something like that in terms of outfits. Although I don't remember if they were wearing that. But in any event, in the movie, they go to the three different directions. And it's not clear whether the new show will have all that or if the show will be just concentrated on the notion of this one American West theme park idea.
That said, the TV show, as is the case with any, I mean, I guess this is a reboot, remake, whatever your terminology is. The TV show has definitely stayed quite true to the ideas that Michael Crichton created for a film 40 years ago, meaning we have a theme park full of androids / robots / whatever your terminology for these creatures are. And that is part of the conversation.
Right. So one of the things is I was looking up beforehand. Because we were emailing about this and calling an AI discussion. Oh, we're going to have an AI discussion, artificial intelligence discussion. But really, I think it's more of an Android discussion. And an Android being is basically a defined term for any robots that have a human type appearance. So they're designed to mimic a human style. And the words come from, I pulled up the things ahead of time, looking on dictionary.com, which the word, I scrolled past it. It's, you know, andro meaning human, and eides in Greek is like of a form. So, and both these are out of Greek origin. So it's like a man or manly or human. And so that the term android is human-like. So the term goes back before robots and things like that. So it would have been things that might have been human form, but it's come to mean robots there, which is to be distinguished from artificial intelligence could inhabit
An Android
robot, but it also could be on your computer screen, or it could be, you know, it could be something that we don't even really communicate directly with, you know, like Watson, the classic artificial intelligence effort by IBM.
Yes.
That was on Jeopardy. And now they're actually putting it out there as they wanted to do, I think, review of financial firm compliance or something like that. They're just, IBM has just made a move there and said how they're going to use the Watson artificial intelligence to help people figure out compliance with rules related to finance and things like that. But there's no person, there's no Android there. It's just, okay. You know, you, it's you just type a something it's a into computer. A screen. You might have a, you know, a voice or something like that.
See, I always thought a robot was a
And a robot is broader in that it could be anything that's mechanical manipulation. So it could be like, you know.
But I always thought a robot was more of a one-trick pony. And what I mean by that is a robot, for example, car manufacturers have robots working the line. They have, you know, each machine has a couple of tasks. It just completely performs those tasks. Whereas I always had a sense that an Android, perhaps, and to what you've just spoken about the fact that an Android could be imbued with artificial intelligence, had a slightly more free-range set of abilities. Yeah, I always think of a robot as being slightly more finite. Like, this is the robot that attaches the roof of the car to the car. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas an Android is like, well, go and get the Android to make tea as well.
Well, it's like an Android is one type of robot. Okay. Robot's a grand realm of things. And, it, you know, I don't think there's a line between the two. It's, you know, the Venn diagram. And then just like the same thing with, you know, the Android is inside of robot.
Okay.
But just the same thing with the artificial intelligence can inhabit there. So you can have an Android that had artificial intelligence, or you could have that one that doesn't.
Okay.
So anyway, in the premise in this show.
Yeah, so let's start with Westworld to sort of right, get so our the premise in the show rolling.
It's more, we said a theme park, but it's really more than that. It's, you go to this.
It's a resort.
Town a resort. Area. Yeah. Stuff like, well, it's not, a, you know, you don't, I mean, you can go get a massage, but everything is as if you are there. You as a person attending it, dress up in the, you choose your garb.
It's an experiential and,
you know,
holiday,
you're
gonna
be
I
a
think.
Gunslinger, yeah. Whether you wear a white hat or a black hat, you know, like basically deciding whether you're going to be good or bad. And then you go out there and there'll be a certain number of people that are also attending the park like you are.
Yep.
But most of the people, quote unquote, you interact with are really androids that have computer programming that is designed to interact with you. And so, and the way the story goes so far, I'm not quite sure how this is going to work out, but each day they go through a day and they have a pre-programmed routine, and you have the opportunity to kind of join along, shape it, move it, do yes. This, don't do that. Oh, you know, like maybe this day you're going to do the, oh, I'm going to go with the treasure hunter guy, because the treasure hunter guy, like, and you can tell in the show, basically they have, you can see very clearly the openings that they call them hosts.
Hosts, that's right.
Although I don't know if they're all hosts. I think maybe some are just, they're there, they're filler, they're extras. Yes. Some are really designed to basically engage the guests and say, oh, would you like to do this? Would you like to do that? You know, some run a bar, there's like a brothel, you know, like that obviously yes. Has its logical consequences course, yes. There. But, you know, the whole thing is if you're out in the Wild West and everybody has guns, one of the things everybody can do is shoot and beat up everybody else, right? Like, so you're not supposed to be able to shoot other people, and the androids are not supposed to be able to kill you, but you can, at will, kill these androids.
It is a play on gaming.
Yep.
That's sort of
yeah, a bunch of people have analogized it to, like, you know, those first-person shooter video games
yeah.
Where, like, it's supposed to be a virtual reality, this stuff, except there's actual physical manifestations. I think in one of the recent episodes, somebody... Anyway, I don't want to give away.
We don't want to give away the show, but we do want to. So let me throw this at you to start off with. And like I say, I'm now fortunate to have HBO indirectly. So I'm now watching this stuff live.
Yeah, we should talk about that a little bit. How do you have HBO? I mean, like, as you said before, you are a minge bag and would never pay for HBO.
No, but fortunately, at my mom's house, she pays for HBO.
Oh,
so
great.
I disappear to my mother's house to watch HBO. So I'm actually not paying. So I do feel like I'm getting something for nothing because I'm not paying for it. So I do feel I'm ahead of the game on the HBO show. Are you enjoying the show? I've watched the first three episodes, and again, if you are watching the show or if you haven't started, we're not going to spoiler it for you, but it is clearly a very expensive piece of television. Visually, it looks terrific. In classic HBO serial fashion, each episode is about an hour. I think if you go online, I think series one is going to be either somewhere between 8 and 12 episodes. I think it's clear HBO have dumped an awful lot of money into this because it looks expensive. It looks cinematic.
Yeah, I think I'm going to start having to watch it on our bigger TV.
It has some big names attached to it on both sides of the camera.
Right.
In front of the camera, Sir Anthony Hopkins, Jeffrey Wright, who, if you don't know who he is the latest Felix Leiter from the James Bond movies.
Oh, yeah. He's also in, people might know him pretty well from being in the Hunger Games
movies. Hunger Games, that's right. Evan Rachel Wood is the female lead. James Marsden is a facial recognized. And, of course, Ed Harris, yep. who still looks great. So there's a lot of big names in it. And then creatively...
Somebody was speculating that basically since it's Ed Harris... They were saying it's like the Truman Show. Like it's an extension of the Truman Show, because the Truman Show was that movie with Jim Carrey where they had like a dome and like a controlled world.
I want to say
that was all people.
One actors. Of the problems with any sci-fi series is the internet bursts through with all kinds of home explanations and remedy's the wrong word, but all kinds of people speculating as to what's really going on. And of course, the internet being the internet means that any basic rule of logic just goes out the window, right. And people are just throwing stuff at the wall. So that's why all of a sudden, does it have something to do with the Truman Show? Is it a play?
Right. Well, that was people joking on that sort of stuff. But so actually, I mean, that's.
Can we talk about the people behind
it? Well, that's a good segue, because it is prone to all this internet type work.
It is. It's one of those shows.
The same way that Lost really pioneered that. And of course, one of the main names behind this is J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams, that's right.
J.J. Abrams.
Correct. And of course, Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, who are married. And Jonathan Nolan is Christopher Nolan's brother, and he's also. Done a lot of he created
Nolan, known for Batman
and Memento, Interstellar,
and the one where they're inside of each other's dreams. Isn't that a Christopher Nolan?
Yes, Inception.
Yeah,
and Jonathan Nolan's his brother and does a lot of either official or unofficial rewriting of Christopher Nolan's scripts. Right. Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy are married. They also created the TV show Person of Interest, which I've only seen a couple of episodes of.
It's funny, whenever you read this stuff, like they'll say, oh, big names attached, Jonathan Nolan, they do that. And Lisa Joy, who it says, like the main thing it seems is she's the writer of the forthcoming Battlestar Galactica movie.
Oh, really?
But she clearly does not have as much of a pedigree. No. But it's funny because they always list the two of them as a team.
Yeah.
So you got J.J. Abrams.
But I think my point is there's some big names attached to this. Right. And in typical HBO fashion, HBO, and I know you were a big fan of True Detective, which I criticized heavily even though I've not watched it. HBO does tend to do TV that they're more than happy to put a lot of money into. And obviously, at the end of the day, your money is spent on two things. It's spent on hardware, and by that I mean sets, locations, and then at the end of the day, talent on both sides of the camera. And with the names we've just listed, I mean, that's a problem. Who knows how much this TV show is costing?
Right.
But if you put all those names together and said they were making a movie, you'd have a pretty expensive blockbuster major. This isn't some independent picture. And one thing I've noticed about watching Westworld so far, it does have a very expensive cinematic sheen to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, all the Western shots obviously play it up really well.
And it does look great.
And one of the things I think about is apparently, so it's been renewed for a second season.
Apparently, it debuted.
But the fact that Anthony Hopkins in it, I'm wondering whether he'll.
How long he's going
to
live?
Hard to believe. Yeah. That he will do like multiple seasons of a TV show, but
what else
who knows,
is he doing?
You know,
what else is he doing?
Rolling in his money. I don't know.
No, the one thing I do, I think apparently it did debut. I think it was like the record debut.
Yeah.
For a HBO show, like in terms of its cumulative rating, because obviously now ratings now are done so differently than back in the past.
DVR views and
myself, yes,
views and
the views of people going over to someone's house and watch HBO for free. I do count.
I don't
think
that's a separate segment, but yeah.
But so far, I've very much enjoyed it. It's within my sort of frame of television entertainment in terms of I can definitely do some sci-fi. That said, I'm now going to give you an opportunity to talk a bit about Lost. I was never a Lost fan.
So it's not really heavy sci-fi.
Not in the traditional sense.
It's sort of like sci-fi in the sense of what we might be able to do in 50 years or 30 years. It's not like weird lasers or things like that.
No, not at all.
You could see all this stuff as being potential. I mean, the most advanced part of it is the notion of these androids having the level of... And this is where it kind of gets into this artificial. We'll come back to Lost in a second. But one of the things is you can't tell so far, are these androids just robots who do things, or is there an artificial intelligence element to them?
And I want to speak to that now, and I'm going to sound very, very mundane when I say this. I enjoy the show, but at a certain moment, I think the conceit of the show is you do have to buy into the idea that we can create something. See, for me, it isn't a question of, we're going to talk about artificial intelligence. So that is the way something thinks and something is, its consciousness. I can buy that. I'm still struggling to buy the fact that we've been able to build something that looks and behaves like ours. Well, this is an interesting thing for me. I don't have a problem making this sort of leap into a TV show where, ooh, we can create robots
that interact.
But I have trouble, in a weird way, I have trouble.
The physical construction.
I have trouble buying into the physical construction.
I will say they heavily gloss over that because basically
each night they
clean up the things and they're like bodies, you know, like they bleed and they stuff, but they show them manufacturing them. And they're clearly supposed to be like 3D printers.
3D printer type thing,
You know, but it's all this like white stuff that's like being made into it. I'm like, well, I'm not sure how they got from that to there.
And I hate to be 12-year-old about it, but I can't convince myself that if I went to the park, would I want to interact in a physical sense with one of the female robots? That's the thing. I do struggle with that on this show.
Then there's a character. I mean, we're only in the third episode, but there's a character. We here at the Atlantic Voice don't get advance copies.
No, we don't.
Reviewers.
No.
But there's a character who clearly looks at the way I think a lot of people would who weren't there for this purpose of like hooking up with robots. They look at this and they go, well, if I was to hook up with you, that's the same as hooking up with a stranger. Like, I have a wife at home kind of thing, and so I don't care that you're a robot. It's too whatever it is.
But anyway. And can I just digress a minute and reference one of our old shows from, I think, 2013? Remember, was it General Dynamics who had built that robot dog?
Oh, yeah, no, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, and so what I'm saying is, in terms of watching Westworld, I think if you're going to enjoy the show, at a certain moment, you do have to sort of buy into the conceit that man, humans, have been able to construct a robot, an android that looks and moves exactly like us. And again, and I think as we head deeper and deeper into our conversation about AR, we all interact with computers a certain way now. I mean, we all have some version of Siri on our phone,
right?
Where, yes, there's a voice and it thinks and it gives us answers. That's not a stretch for me. For me, the stretch is, yeah, I can tell.
Building the thing.
Well, you know, weird. I don't want to be pedantic about it, but
I mean, part of this thing is they're showing in some shots. They basically show the robots like they might have been 20 years before this thing is.
And they look like robots.
And they like much more robotic and things like that. And in the original movie,
that's what it was.
It was a goofy thing that we're basically. I've only seen the first 15 minutes because I suddenly realized, even though the movie, it's clearly a very different thing. I was pretty sure I was going to start stumbling into facts in the movie that would give me a preview of what would happen in this. So I stopped watching the movie. But anyway, but there was a thing in there where basically the guy says, oh, you know, you can tell who they are because their hands. Because they always have a hard time making hands. And the hands, when they show a picture of hands, it looks a little bit like a mechanical stuff in a glove.
Okay.
And so in the movie, like, that's the notion. They really had a hard time with the hands.
Yeah.
The mechanical part that was a problem. It's kind of a goofy little conceit.
Yeah,
there.
So again, I'm not...
J.J. Abrams, though, makes us prone to this sort of overall thing. Now, the one thing that's notable is that although J.J. Abrams created Lost, really the plotting and all the stuff that went into it later on really is Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, which they're not associated with this. But you can very much see in the way the show is set up all the little pieces that are available for them to go different ways.
Yeah.
And so I may be sort of jumping the...
No, because I'm going to reference another TV show.
Jumping ahead of these things. But one of the things about Lost, which I liked and maybe people didn't, is, you know, there was a tremendous amount of speculation. So Lost went on these multiple seasons and like things in the second season, you would have really had no idea. Like there isn't like, oh, there's a grain of that in the beginning. You could see how they took something from the beginning, but there was nothing in what would happen in the first steps, the first season, that necessarily led to some of the things that came up as, oh, here's the explanation kind of thing. They could have done any number of different things with the premises they set out. But so when everybody starts speculating on this one online, I think this is what's going on here. I think what's happening here. I think it's kind of funny because you're selecting from hundreds of possible outcomes of this stuff. Sure, yours is a reasonable thing, but as we learned in Lost, almost none of those things turned out to be true.
I want to reference and we've talked about this before earlier this year when we did our best of TV show. I'm a big fan of the 1967 TV show, The Prisoner, which was, again, it was on the face of it, a secret agent show. But ultimately, it was, for want of a better word, science fiction / fantasy in terms of it dealt with a reality that clearly wasn't our reality. But what I'm saying is it was a multi-layered show. Even 40 years ago, if that show was on TV now, we would all be spending every week online speculating as to where it's going and what's going on with it. I think this could be the creative issue for Westworld. And I again, I never watched Lost. I remember I watched the first couple of episodes, and then I'm like, yeah, I just can't buy into this, and I let it go. Unlike, I know you did. You stayed with it for the 5 years it was on. I think the interesting thing about Westworld so far, and just having watched three episodes, is it really has laid out this very broad cloth of options. And that in terms of just a television show, yep. It can go in many different directions. Sure. Yeah. But I think the issue with so much of this type of, for want of a better word, science fiction TV is you almost bite off too much.
Yeah, no, so, I mean, that was the complaint of Lost, is that it went these places and people were like, oh, we have a resolution
and
these questions.
And so I do think there's a danger with it that it ultimately might go down some paths that people are going to rebel against just because it's not the path they would like to see it go. That said, though, I admire any piece of television that's ready to lay out such a broad canvas and say, here we go. And so I know for me as a viewer, it's definitely grabbed me in because I do want to see, well, what choices do you make? And then in 3 years' time, I can criticize where they ended up going. But I do feel as a TV show, it's laid out a variety of different ideas. And we are going to stay on this show on the idea of artificial intelligence. But I find it quite an ambitious, it's quite an ambitious statement on TV. Whereas if you compare it just within the oeuvre of HBO, I don't watch Game of Thrones, but we both watch The Sopranos. I think The Sopranos, you know, there was an idea, but everything sort of ran from this very linear track.
Yeah.
Whereas Westworld is sort of going, you know, it's like going to it's like going to an airport and there are 45 different gates and you can go to each gate and get on a plane to somewhere completely different. I think Westworld is bravely setting that out, and it is going to be interesting to see where they go with it.
Do you realize? See, so one of the things.
That was a great metaphor, wasn't
sure,
it?
Sure. Well, it's even better than you
see,
think.
See, don't knock our artificial intelligence. There's real intelligence here on this show.
It's even better than you think because one of the things people have said about it is it's got a meta meaning. Like, essentially, it may be commenting on our watching of TV shows.
Really?
That because, you know, you look at what these people are doing in the way they're. The way they're consuming this theme park,
okay,
you know, and choosing their adventures and doing these things and being so interactive with it,
yes,
and maybe somewhat exploitive of it, that it's it's the same way as people consume the shows themselves, that people sort of are digging into the pieces and dealing with that. But what you mentioned in terms of the idea could go different ways. I can use the phrase choose your adventure, where it's the idea like,
okay.
You could pick any number of different ways. Well, that's exactly what the characters are doing on the show, is that they could go there and they could consume it. Wonder, you know, it could go any number of different directions on any given day when they're participating in the activities of the theme park. They could decide to be bad guys. They could join a posse. They could shoot people and eliminate characters. They can, you know, participate with them and try to make the world a better place, kind of thing. And so it's the same thing that the show itself can do with these things.
Can I ask you a question? Have you yourself ever taken part? I've said this before, I'm not a gamer, so I've never done any sort of role playing. I remember back in the day as a teenager, I gave the original Dungeons and Dragons a go, but I've never been that way. So I do find it would be interesting. We need to. If you're a gamer out there and you're watching the show, please email us, because I'd like to know what your perspective of it is in terms of you as you out there as someone who does these things. How does watching this show appeal to you? Whereas I'm not a gamer, so at a certain level, my perspective is slightly different.
I'm the same boat as you are, and I played a few of those things a couple of times. There was one that was related to like car races. It was like a Mad Max version of like a participatory Dungeons and Dragons, where you would soup up your car and then you'd have it doing things and battles in cars and things like that.
Yeah.
My problem with all those things, and they had those books that were, the Choose Your Adventure is a book thing, like where you could basically, you get to a page and you'd say, do you want to go into the cave or go this way? And then you would flip to different pages in the books and it would tell the story from there. There was also a video game, I don't remember, Dragon's Lair, if that was over in London. Dragon's Lair was unique for, it was animated. It was like an animated, it looked like a Disney movie.
Okay.
And it played on a big laser disc in this machine. And instead of like a computer game where it was pixels and things like that, you would go there and you'd say, I'm going to choose to go this way. And then it would have a different, you know, the laser disc would go to a different part of the story. It's like a choose your adventure version of this stuff. My big problem with all those is I wanted to find out what all the outcomes were, right? And so as long as the number of permutations you could do was small, if it was in a book, you know, you knew all the other choices yeah. were right there in the book.
Okay.
And so I'd end up going backwards and forwards going, okay, well, what if I had chosen this? What if I had chosen that? Because I want to know all of the potential outcomes. Okay. Well, it doesn't really work that way. The video gamers, I'm sure, would say, well, you could never do that. Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe actually, if you were a video game person, you could pick all the choices. Like, well, they used to have Castle Wolfenstein. Like, I haven't played that kind of video game in very, very okay. many years. But maybe you can still in a modern beat game is like choose to do this, choose to do that. I did play Lego Star Wars with my with my nephew, and there was definitely parts where you'd ferret out the parts, and you basically never die. I mean, you die in it, but like basically you can reset from where you are, and so you can ultimately flesh out everything in yeah. the story. So I imagine that might be some people's experience with it. But I did want to say one other thing about the connection to Lost. For those who maybe saw Lost, because obviously what a lot of people got upset about with Lost is it didn't resolve about all. They went so many different directions and it didn't do that stuff.
And can I quickly interject? That was the same criticism of The Prison of 50 years ago. People didn't like how it ended.
Yeah.
And the trouble with these shows is there's a pretty good chance it's not. The law of averages says it's not going to end the way you think it's going to end because – And this is the interesting thing, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when you start on these shows with all these different ways to go – you're unfortunately playing against the viewer's expectation of things ending in a linear way.
Right.
So I sometimes feel, unfortunately, with so many of these shows, and to let you get back to Lost, the show begins. People might as well say, you're probably going to be disappointed with how this all ends up.
Yeah.
You know, that's
every time you mention things, now I have an extra thought. I have to try to keep track of these. So
okay.
The thought I was trying to get to before, which you didn't interrupt, it's fine, was that for viewers of Lost, what I think is different about this is Lost had an element of supernatural. Now, theoretically, maybe there's scientific elements to it, but there were bits in Lost where, oh, you turn this weird wheel and the island moves and goes somewhere. And when they got to the end, they flash back to a beginning of time that was very mythical, like with this idea of good and evil. It wasn't really scientific, where it's pretty clear this one is set up to be. I've seen no hints in it that they're going towards anything supernatural. It's supposed to be a real explanation.
Isn't the whole point of Lost is it's sort of a waiting room for the afterlife? Wasn't that the sort of whole point of it?
No, I mean, who knows? You know, so I mean, it's
spoilers.
No. Well, they end up in a waiting room after they all die. Like, so that's not the Lost
thing.
But that's where it's all confused. But
okay.
Lost was much more all over the place. And I think that's because they know. Now, the thing is with J.J. Abrams, he probably looks at this one and he says, I want to make, you know, he's learned these. They learn lessons. They learn what their critique was of their art, their product they made last time. And the critique was this thing was all over the place.
It was all over the place.
There was no explanations.
Because you put it somewhere where it was going to be all over the place.
I imagine in setting this up, even though it feels like it could go everywhere, I imagine they have a notion of how to – it can go everywhere, but it's got more structure to it. So they're probably going to try their best to avoid the pointless segues.
And can I say this in terms of the creative team? And again, what do we know who comes up with what idea? But everything Jonathan Nolan has been involved in, especially with his brother, he's very much a puzzler in terms of he constructs. If you watch any Christopher Nolan movie, if you watch Person of Interest, even Interstellar, if you are prepared to sit down and go through the steps logically, then it does make sense. And I don't mean this is a criticism of Lost, but the minute you set something in sort of a slightly surreal, slightly fantastical place, you can make some storytelling jumps that don't need to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You just get away with it.
Yeah.
Whereas I do find that looking at Jonathan Nolan's work, and again, especially his work with his brother Christopher, and I think back, the two of them together wrote Memento, which if you've ever seen as a film, you can watch it and figure it out. I do believe that Westworld, from what we've seen so far, is going to make that deal with the viewer that we're not just going to take left turns on you just because we need to, unless like Anthony Hopkins dies and they need to find a way to replace his character. Do you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
You know, we're not going to get some Dallas moment where Bobby Ewing wakes up in the shower and it was all a dream.
All of which connects into the other point that you brought to mind, which is, you can have everything could go a different way, but it can be self-corrective. Like, in other words, it could go out these directions, but as a story, it's designed. I'm making a hand gesture here where
my
hands go out, but then they come back together.
Yes, I can see.
Which is funny because I don't know if you caught in the most recent episode, they talked about the androids being the host being designed to be self-corrective.
Yes.
We're talking about their interaction with the guests, but the truth is they're interacting with themselves the whole time too. So if no guest stumbles into them, they don't just stand in place. They go through their routines.
Yes.
And although there's a certain amount of different things that can happen, they're designed to steer the story the way it's supposed to go. So perfect example, I don't think I'm giving anything away, is one of the characters starts suggesting things that seem to be out of line with the premise of what he or she character. Then these are both androids just interacting with each other. There's no guest there. The other character has reactions that are similar to what we've seen before. I mean, because this is what they do, is like the chooser, you get to kind of plow over the same ground a couple of times, but it's clearly designed to steer their plot line back to where it's supposed to be.
Yes.
Like, you know, somebody's like, oh, we should do this. And they're like, maybe how about do that? And they're nudging everything back to where it's supposed to be. So it's another way, it's like meta within the story. It's doing the same thing as the story is doing
for us
kind of thing. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's that. Now, the catch to all that, the part where it gets really interesting and which is kind of leads into our whole thing about androids and artificial intelligence and things like that, is when things go wrong in that situation, they go horribly wrong, right? Like if you design things that are designed to align everything the right way, and this is one of the things I was reading about the artificial intelligence, the real fear that we should all have isn't that they're going to rise up and rebel against humankind in and of itself. It's that they will think they're fixing. It's like what, you know, it's what we talked about Terminator, right? Like, you know, Terminator, it eradicates life on Earth because you give it programming that says you should do this, and it takes it to its logical extreme. So here, and this could happen to the story as well.
Yes.
Again, if you admit it, within the story and how it ends up being a show, is if the steering goes off and now it's self-correcting towards a stupid outcome, like in terms of us watching it, or within it, a calamitous outcome for the guests and things like that. That's where the story gets interesting, right? Is that, you know, the various robots all doing what they're supposed to do, but it's not yielding the outcome because there's been some fly in the ointment, so to speak.
And that's been the interesting thing so far.
Which is a nice tie into the story. You'll see some flies.
And you do talk about a couple. You talked about one scene, and there was another tremendous scene where the human park operators, basically a maintenance team, run across a group of robots, for want of a word, who are just stuck in place.
Yeah.
And they're stuck in place because the one robot they needed to go and do something.
They're missing a character. They don't know how to do it.
So they're just stuck because the one character wandered off and sort of that robot broke down. So seven other robots now were not able to follow their programming.
Right.
Because
programming, but they weren't able to like advance anything because they were stuck without this person who would, or the robot that would do things.
So I guess
way more than I expected us to talk about the actual show.
Yeah, I take it you're enjoying it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of work. I mean, and you know, it does run the potential of going sideways. But I'm one of those fools who, once I'm committed to a show like this, I feel like just like the book, just like I have to find out what the finale. I'm like, I'll watch if it ends up being horrible. Like everybody was abandoning Lost, and I was like, nah, I'm good with it. Let's see how where it goes.
And I do want to. And to your point, there,
you're more prone to abandon shows when you don't like where they're going, right?
Yes, and I did abandon Lost, but so far this one has done enough for me that I'm not going to abandon it because ultimately, I mean,
we're three episodes into something that could be 5-6 years.
Well, this this is the interesting thing about it, and to sort of digress away from artificial intelligence and just look at for a brief moment at the act of making television shows. It is interesting. Obviously, HBO have looked to create a series that's going to anchor Sunday nights for about 4 or 5 years. So in reality, we are looking at 55 to 60 hours of television at the minimum, if the ratings stay where they are. It will be interesting to see. Sometimes a canvas can be too big. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think, and I remember when we discussed Lost, unfortunately, some TV shows, the storytelling art gets into trouble because it has too much time to fill. So it has to wander. One of the greatest things about The Prisoner was it was one series. It was 16 episodes. It's starting here and it's finishing there. And so ultimately it doesn't have too much filler that can unwieldily tip your overall narrative. And I think that's going to be the challenge for Westworld. If it's going to be on for 5 years,
you know, I think so many of us as viewers, you are conditioned to, it's artificial intelligence, so it's going wrong. Do you know what I mean? That's sort of that's always the premise with anything to do artificial. It'll be interesting to see how long it takes this series to get there, if in fact that's where it goes.
I mean, everybody's assuming that's where it goes, but I could very well see it,
which brings us back to artificial intelligence,
which is about like people's interaction with this stuff, the notions of control, and can you create life and things like that.
Well, that's the thing. So in order to get to that part of our conversation now, I want to stay with one thing about Westworld. Westworld, the film, was written, and this is not us saying this, this has been said all over the internet. Westworld, the film from 40 years ago, was written from the perspective of human visitors who get into trouble when the robots get out of control.
Right, right.
I think what the television series has decided to do, I think they've admitted it, is that they're writing this very much from a perspective of
the creators, I guess.
It's written from the, to a point, from the host. They are as interested in the hosts as they are the human
interaction with the people.
Exactly.
There's interaction with the people who set up the place. Like, I haven't seen anything in the other, in the movie. Of course, I only watched first 15
minutes. Well, you only watched the first 15 minutes.
The 15 minutes, but it does seem to be set up around the guests and the robots, whereas the new one seems to be, while the guests are important, it's also about like the people who created the robots and how their mental state is relative to what they've done here. And
definitely there's been a sense so far that one should not make the mistake of assuming that the androids are going to be the villains.
Right.
I think that's a true statement. And so that does, and so I guess that comes to our now argument about artificial intelligence.
What's life, you know, in this regard.
Well, it's interesting. I sat through Ex Machina, although frankly it should be pronounced Ex Machina, because that's how it's written. So I sat through that the other week, and to digress for a moment, I had some visitors over my house who all wanted to watch the second presidential debate between the current candidates for president of the United States. I didn't have time for that. So rather than sit through both sides of the political spectrum making extreme comments about the other one, I put on my headphones and I watched Ex Machina via my computer.
This is a 2015 movie.
Starring Oscar Isaac and Dominic... Dom Hall Gleason,
And
both of whom from the later Star Wars movies.
Vikander. Is Alicia Vikander the one who was up for the Oscar?
Yes. She's also actually, I think she dates or is married to Michael Fassbender, who plays a robot in Prometheus. So how it all comes together.
She won an Oscar. Okay, that's right. So she plays like a robot thing, and I haven't seen.
So I've seen the film.
Pretty clearly, she goes bonkers.
Yeah, well, like
that. Well, that's not right.
The film was written.
That's what the previews give you the indication of.
I watched the film. I must say, the film was very well reviewed when it came out. I can't say I enjoyed it as much as the reviewers did. I felt it was slightly lumbering is the wrong word. Hackneyed is the wrong word. But I didn't get any sort of resolution other than, oh, wow, you know, you need to be careful what you create because then it gets a mind of its own. Mm-hmm. That seemed to be the overwhelming message of it. And I, you know, again, I don't want to run counterculture, but a film that was so well reviewed when it came out, I think it's currently like a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. I personally don't think it's that entertaining. And frankly, if I had a choice between watching that again or just sticking with Westworld, if someone said to me, you now need your fill of fictional artificial intelligence, I'm sticking with Westworld rather than Ex Machina.
Well, I mean,
that said, the acting is terrific, but I didn't feel that the ideas presented in it were like, oh, wow, I'd never thought of that.
I mean, here's an interesting thing, and people have been talking about that, whether the movies are inadequate relative to... maybe the reason we have these superhero movies is because when on TV, you know, they're going to do this show, and let's, you know, maybe we're overplaying its ability to be intelligent. Get it? As an intelligent show, but they can explore so many things. I mean, they've got, like you said, 55, 60 hours.
Yeah.
It's a huge undertaking on which they can take different paths. Ex Machina is an hour and 48 minutes. You know, you can't.
You can
allude to things in an artistic way.
No,
that's right. It's no aspersions on it. But we've maybe gotten. Whereas in the past, you didn't get smart enough TV to kind of show you what movies couldn't be. Like movies were bigger
than
anything TV. But now you've got TV shows that can show you all the things they can explore. And you go to see a movie and you're like, well, it looked pretty. You know?
Yeah,
I get it. It's like a distinction between like a picture, a single picture, Because I always think of these, like a good movie a lot of times is just like a portrait of relationships or some right. particular topic. But it's got all the pieces there. You can look at it all at one time in one cohesive piece versus a book. You know, a book's got so many parts and you might have to go back and remind yourself of different parts. And that's maybe what the TV show difference is.
So Ex Machina, I'm not sure I would recommend it, but it does deal with these ideas of basically creating.
At least it keeps up your tradition of mispronouncing.
Yes, creating conscience and creating awareness.
Yeah. So, you know, the other movie that people always point to when they talk about is Blade Runner. Blade Runner, of course, for people who haven't seen it, first of all, go out and see it immediately. It's one of the greatest movies of the past.
You know, well, can I stop you for a moment? The trouble with Blade Runner is there have now been so many different versions of it. And yet, funnily enough, I like the version that everyone else hates, which is the one with the voiceover.
Right. There's a version that has narration, which is what it came out as originally.
Yes.
Because they put the narration on because people didn't understand what the heck it was about having a narration. Like, forget about what it was about. They didn't understand what was happening on the screen.
No.
You know, because they'd be like, you needed the voiceover of that movie. But some version of it. If you're going to see one version of it, you should see the one with the voiceover because you'll have no idea what's going on if you just watch it without voiceover.
One of Harrison Ford's early starring roles. I think he was still Han Solo at the time. I think it's 1981-82. It was directed by Ridley Scott. A couple of other people in it, quite famous. What's his name from Battlestar Galactica? And James Edward Olmos is in it.
Yep. Sean Young, Rutger Hauer.
And it is basically about androids run amok.
Based on the Philip K. Dick book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Yes.
You know, in this one, they're robots. But anyway, go out and see it. There is also a sequel coming up, which is next year, Blade Runner 2049, I think it's called.
Harrison Ford's still in it.
Ryan Gosling. I don't know who
the else. Director is. Denis Villeneuve.
Who did Sicario, which was, if that's
it. Ridley Scott's still involved, but this time as a producer, not directing. It is, to talk back to the original Blade Runner, it is visually a quite arrested movie. Yeah. It's truly spectacular. It looks great. It presents what is now a sort of hackneyed vision of a dystopian future.
Yeah,
there you go. I just made that sentence up. See, that's intelligence right there.
Everything's like dark and
everything's dark and dank and
messy
and neon and everything. But obviously, that's now quite a hackneyed view of the future, which is interesting to compare with Westworld, where the future appears very clean and antiseptic.
Polished.
So it's interesting how that's come back around. But Blade Runner obviously dealt with the notion of androids thinking for themselves and basically going off script.
Right.
And Harrison Ford's character is a Blade Runner, which is the nickname for a sort of a cop, law enforcement that tracks down androids who have got out of control. So Blade Runner, one of the first films to sort of deal with these.
Yeah. So again, I was just thinking here, like what's the ultimate question when we talk about androids as a society? And I was thinking there's two ways I'm thinking of it right now. One is,
can you create something that thinks for itself?
Well,
that's my belief.
Well, one is like, okay, but what's the question for us? What you can do, and you either will be able to do it. Let's assume you could do it. You could create something. Well, and by think for itself, let's assume it's got that level.
And that's always been the case.
But how should we? The one version is, how should we treat that, react that, understand that, or behave towards it, towards androids if they do become semi-sentient or whatever it is, that they have their own autonomous choices they're making and things. How should we treat those things?
It's a deep philosophical question.
Man. Right. But here's even worse is, what are they? Right. Like, because they're separate questions. One, but they both have the same result. Like maybe the what are they is what leads to how should we treat them.
I think unfortunately they will always be viewed. But, and again, this is where, I mean, you know, I don't want to get too deep and all the way in here.
This is what makes the show interesting. This is what made Blade Runner interesting. This made, you know,
humans regard themselves at the top of the food chain.
Sure.
And I mean that. And so, you know, we sit around and we give dolphins a lot of credit for being very intelligent. But at the end of the day, if I go to work and my boss is a dolphin, I'm doing whatever I want and I'm not following his instructions because as far as I'm concerned, he's some sort of fish. So that is my throwaway.
If that dolphin had the power to fire you,
okay,
you gotta listen to the dolphin.
So what I mean is here is I can never see man creating something. It's just not in our physiology, our DNA, to create something that we would be in awe of. Because we created it. That's why man does...
Maybe not
man,
awe of, but like, listen, you know, the two extremes are...
That's why any godlike figure, no one ever knows exactly what the creation origin story is for any of these gods. Because if you know the origin story, then at some moment, you place yourself above it.
Yeah, well, like, listen, if you create something, you should always feel like, well, shoot, clearly I was able to create it. It wasn't able to create me.
Exactly. Kind
of thing. So I'm better than it. So at some level you could say, and this is what leads to the ultimate thing, is the two extremes is this thing that I have created is completely expendable. It's no different than my car, whatever it is.
Right.
And if I decide to junk it, I can junk it.
Right.
I can throw it away. I don't have to worry about it at all. The other extreme is this thing that I have created, their brain, their systems, the way they act is so close to being a person, or at least an animal. But let's say the extreme version is so close to being a person, why would I treat it any differently than a person? Because there's what's the difference other than the fact that it was manufactured by me and it has, you know, electrical parts, or maybe it won't be electrical at that point. But what's the difference, right?
Which, to be fair, actually, without giving too much away, is kind of at the crux of Ex Machina.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
what makes these shows interesting. I mean, I don't think you and I are going to come up with the answer, but I think, you know, that's the question that you explore. And I start thinking about when it comes to...
But for dramatic narrative, that has to be what works.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there is clear. This notion of there's always going to be this notion in Ex Machina, in Westworld, in any other, in 2001 Space Odyssey, where Hal decides to take over himself. From purely dramatic purposes, the drama plays on the fact that we ultimately believe we are supreme, and all of a sudden we're now behind something else. That's always the dramatic narrative. But what I'm saying is
that's the artificial intelligence piece. Like, that could be the case whether it's an android or not.
I think
the android element adds a different part, because if it looks like a person and it behaves like a person and it's, you know, has some degree of free will like a person, isn't it kind of a person? You know, or I'm making a rhetorical argument.
Yeah,
I don't mean I'm necessarily convinced of that, but isn't it kind of like a person? And so why should we treat it different? If we were able to, like, let's put it this way. If I was able to... If I clone a person, right? I don't go, well, you know, I manufactured that person over there, so therefore I can do with what I want.
Yeah, that's a good point, isn't it?
So if I made it out of mechanical parts, but it was just like, let's say this is not where we are, but let's say it's exactly like a person, except for the fact that it's mechanical. It's just like if I cloned a child and had grown it up through things. If other than the fact that it's mechanical, it behaves, it's the way its brain works, all these things are exactly the same. Why would I treat it any different? You know, just because it was manufactured there. And that's an issue that I think we'll confront. And because it looks like a person, there's also a visceral element.
Yes.
That just really makes it hard. I mean, like, listen, we talked about the dog robot, which does not really look like a dog. It looks like a robot, but it moves kind of like a dog. And you feel bad when the people in displaying its balance capabilities kick it. You know,
that's true.
And you go, oh, that doesn't seem fair to that. Now, that's a brief twin.
Actually,
but now imagine the thing that they are... They show it on TV, and they're like, well, let me show you while I cut its head off.
Well, to go back to that dog episode, I was criticized for actually not caring when someone kicked it.
But you conceded that there was a reaction internally, and I think that's
real.
Like, yes. I don't think there was any worry, because that thing didn't have a brain at all. All it did was... You know,
move. Well, I also think, and again, because we're sort of trying to draw these parallels between entertainment and then real life. I do think as people, you really touch on something there, that the minute you make it in your own image, you're right. Viscerally, you treat it differently.
Right.
Whereas the interesting thing about 2001 and Hal, which I mentioned, Hal is clearly as smart as any of the humans on the spaceship. But at the end of the day, he's defeated because you go and switch him off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas I think, you know, you look at, you know, obviously we're talking about Westworld and Ex Machina. You've created something that seems your equal, and therefore there isn't a very simple kill switch to the existence of which reinforces your dominance.
Which is not to say you can't possibly have an attachment, because you could create it. I mean, just imagine if you're a blind person, you can't see who the people are, but you know voices and things. But like that movie Her
with
Scarlett Johansson is the voice, and what's the guy's name?
Oh, Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix. So that was all like I only caught bits of it, but the premise was it was the, you know, the artificial intelligence in your computer, and clearly the notion was, oh, he gets attached to that, and does he feel bad about it?
Can I ask you about when Watson, the IBM supercomputer, was on Jeopardy, and didn't he win a couple of episodes, or he dominated?
Yeah.
How was, you know, having only occasionally watched Jeopardy, because this, the questions are too easy for me. How was Watson personified on the show? So you have human contestant. You've got Alex Trebek asking questions. Was Watson just like a box? Or that's what I'm saying. How was he personified? Because again, I think so much of this is how it's personified to you.
Yeah, I think he was connected into, or it was connected into, see, I just call it he. It was connected
into, because he had a male voice, right?
It had a male voice. And I think, like, it wasn't a hand that went out and hit the button, but I think it was wired.
Because I do want to get back. You used the male voice there. You sent me an article where they discussed the notion of artificial intelligence always being presented as female.
Well, not always.
Oh, not always.
They were talking about, like, okay, what is, you know, parts of this were, we'd call it fembot, you know, like the, you know, we don't need to get into the sexual element of this wives, sort of stuff. Yeah. But I mean, one of the, and this was on the
Ringer. And again,
I want to give credit, because that created, so the Ringer, which is of course that spinoff of Bill Simmons stuff.
It is?
It's Kate Nibbs, K-N-I-B-B-S, wrote this article talking about Westworld, and talking about female AI tropes, as they said, basically.
Yes.
Because, and one of the premises at the beginning, where they said, which she says right up front, it's not really clear this is true, but that a bunch of them went the direction because of Hal, because you mentioned, because everybody's creeped out by Hal.
Yes.
That they went to the female voice. But put that all aside, I mean, that may just be sort of a legend, but you can see where, I mean, there's a reason that there are more females in, and they may be not good reasons, that are more females are in the role of receptionist, hostess, you know, the interactive element thing, that people are less likely to be threatened, more likely to be forthcoming or something with that with females.
Yeah.
You know, it's whether that's because of old gender stereotypes or because it's some sort of innate genetic programming. Things, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not what we're here to answer today, because we'd go on much longer than we have to. But you could see why, if I'm going to design a interactive robot, that I might choose female form and female voices, because that's what people are more accustomed to in terms of provide me what I need. I would like some information. I would like a reservation. I would like to know how to do this. Like, one of the places they talk about these potentially first coming in is at like hotel desks, that basically, you know, do you really need a person behind the counter straightening it, like when you go to check in at a hotel? And on the other hand, do people want to go in there and scan a credit card? I mean, maybe at a low budget hotel, but if you go in someplace nice, maybe you'd like to see a face that you could sort of interact with. I talked to a person a number of years ago about, like, they were trying to set up a company that was virtual assistants, like a receptionist at buildings, where there would be an actual person on the other end, but they wouldn't, in order to, it was sort of like temporary staffing behind your counter at your office or something like that, with a screen and things like that. But it would be an actual person, but you could easily see how that would
But you interact via a screen.
That's right.
Okay.
Because why bother paying somebody to be there 24/7 when three people come into your office, you know, a week? You know, just have somebody there that says, okay, they press a button. Oh, look, there's somebody here. We'll have the person come up on screen, kind of thing. But you could easily see where that could be replaced by something automated.
I mean, there is something very – and again, we don't know the reasons, and we've thrown out so many options there. There is something – it seems much warmer. And I mean, and again, have you ever seen Total Recall with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yes. I mean, who hasn't seen that?
Yeah. I don't trust that taxi cab robot, Johnny Cab.
Right.
He seems to have a bad attitude.
Yeah.
If it was a female taxi cab driver, I would have been much more about, okay, whatever way you want to go best.
Yeah.
And that's why Arnold tears his head off.
Well, they make him, they made that character. I mean, to
obnoxious,
be serious, the character obnoxious and also very fake looking.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that they say, the people who are doing this stuff are saying, well, maybe what we really need in a lot of these roles, if we're going to do this, is something that's sort of human, but very clearly not. Like, you don't, like, to prevent that attachment, if you make it into a cartoon, now you don't have to worry about people being like, oh, it's not fair that, you know, you slapped that robot in the face. because it doesn't feel like a person anymore. But the thing is, like, you know, people, we get attached to everything. Look at animals. I mean, first of all, we get attached to animals in movies that aren't even real. But yeah. Like in real life, animals, like they talk about dogs. Like one of the reasons that dogs are so successful, like we always think we designed the dogs.
Yeah.
Well, the dogs exploited our own innate love of little fuzzy things. I mean, it's hard to know chicken or the egg, which came first. But listen, there's a reason that when a puppy, you see a puppy, oh my goodness, puppy, I want to carry, I want to take care of the puppy. And it's, it, you know, if puppies look like cockroaches, you wouldn't be like, oh my goodness, I want to take care of the puppy.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So they're programming us. And so, you know, considering our attachment to an animal that essentially we bred and created in that sense, and we don't, you know, we didn't manufacture it, but we kind of produced what it is we have as a dog on a long range scale. I can only imagine what it'd be like if you start doing these androids.
Are you threatened by AI? Because I am.
Yeah, well, we talked about this part we talked about before. I mean, it definitely could go badly.
But, oh, yeah, I'm not. You know, I'm a bit. And again, you know, and I mean it half jokingly, because that's why these TV shows and films that we will talk about ultimately play on the fact that I think it is a human fear that whatever you
create, that's one of the things. So this article talks about, you know, one of the things about the female trope there is that it's very easy to turn on its head. I mean, that's obviously the premise of Ex Machina without even seeing it.
Yes.
You can tell the notion is the thing that you most thought was unthreatening gets turned around and it's what did I just say? Unthreatening turns around and it becomes threatening.
Yes,
but that's the same things that we're. That's why like the scary story about the babysitter killer is a scary story to begin with.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be a robot. It's just like anything that seems unthreatening, but then oh my goodness, it's malevolent. Seems like a bigger story.
I wonder how far away.
It's not a big surprise when the guy who walks around with an axe is threatening because he's walking around with an axe in the first
place. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. I wonder how far away we are. Because you have
this stuff. Yeah.
I mean, you have some. I mean, there was another article bouncing around.
So one of the things that, you know, like, and I just thought about this. I was thinking about this. We obviously presaged all this.
But oh, yeah.
When we were thinking about what the thing is and, you know, if it acts like a person, it essentially is a person. Well, what if really we aren't people to begin with, right? Like, what if we are the androids in effect? And this all relates to a story. That was, I mean, it's not like this is a brand new story, but it was tied into Elon Musk. Basically, Elon Musk says anything, it becomes like.
Elon Musk does seem to me like a bit of an attention hogger.
Oh, yeah.
He's always coming up with all kinds of nonsense. I'm going to Mars. My cars are going to drive myself.
Just came out this week with the fact that now he just told everybody, I've reprogrammed all your cars to be fully self-driving.
Yes.
But you're not going to be able to use that for like a year or so. And but he's. Like just right. I mean, what is it? 4 months ago, 3 months ago, that one of his cars crashed into things and the guy died because he was using his autopilot. Elon Musk has no problems forging ahead. He's basically like, that's all right. I'm going to go with this thing, and we're going to say autonomous driving cars.
But obviously, can I just digress for one quick moment? Obviously, I just bought my car a couple of months ago, which is why we've done a couple of shows about cars. But if there's going to be self-driving cars, frankly, the onus should be off us to buy them. They need to buy us.
Yeah.
Yeah, self-driver car. Zeph, will you be my passenger? I will pay you $500 a month for the next 5 years at 1.9% so that you can ride around with me. So Elon Musk needs to be careful what he wishes for.
Exactly.
Because if I'm out there, I'm going to play hardball with driverless cars.
One of the things he said is...
Because without a passenger... What's a driverless car to do?
Listen, the driverless car, like what he has said is when we have this autonomous stuff, you're not going to be able to use it for Uber. I mean, this ties right into our discussion. Uber, he basically said it's going to be a thing called the Tesla network where you'll only be able to use your car for ride sharing through a Tesla-based system.
Okay.
And so what you say is not too far. Like, okay, if you get to that point where it's basically a Tesla network designed to drive people around, well, why do I buy the car? What you're really using me for is financing of your business enterprise, right? So and maybe that's what maybe that'll be the plan. Maybe they'll sell you a car for half price, you know, to start. Like, you know, they're not going to give you free cars, but they're going to sell you a car for half price if you promise to make it available for the self-driving system from which they can make money going forward. It now becomes an investment by them.
I do worry walking down the sidewalk, having a car creep alongside me going, come on, Zeph, $10. No, I'm walking. $7. $7 and I'll take you to 7-Eleven. No, go away. Stop bothering me.
Yeah. And that's a car. I mean, it could just run you over if you're like,
someone arrest this car for curb crawling because he's
in the car.
He's hustling me for money.
The artificial intelligence in the car would say, listen, Zeph, I've been programmed to take care of people.
Yeah.
it's not safe for you to walk there. You're really out of shape. And so you're going to have to get in the car. Zeph, get in the car. Zeph, and then pins you in a corner and says, well, listen, for your own sake, I'm going to break your leg. So you get
into
the car.
So you have to get in the car, yes. Required to get in the car. Yeah, so Elon Musk seems to have absolutely zero fear of technology. And there seems to be a reason why.
Because he doesn't think we're real.
No.
So I mean, explain that's that story. The quote that leads off this article. The article was in. The funny thing. So you sent this to me, and my brother sent it to me completely independently. So this must be going around all the intelligence circles. From the Guardian was. I mean, I assume you're going to link to this. Olivia Salome on October 11th. So the lead quote from his, there is a billion to one chance that we're living in base reality, he said at a conference.
So what did he mean by that?
So the notion is, given the fact that we are approaching a level of being able to simulate so many things down to details.
Okay.
You have to assume, like if we're ultimately to the point where we could simulate life, and this doesn't have to be androids, this could be just inside of a computer, like a virtual reality type of setup. If we get to that point, we have to assume that some other intelligent life out there did the same thing, and we're just a product of it. Why would we be the one, like as he says, the base reality? Like if in fact people can simulate reality to the point where people wouldn't know the difference, the odds of us being the one true reality drop down to nothing.
And I get that, but I'm not going to take a shot at Elon Musk. Because you know something? I saw that on an old Twilight Zone where we're all in the Petri dish. So he's all coming across like he's some sort of super intelligent. But he stole that from the Twilight Zone where we are the experiment.
So the article mentions that the idea actually dates back as far as the 17th century philosopher Descartes. How do you pronounce that? Descartes. Okay.
Yeah. Or Descartes.
You know,
because he's French.
So the notion is even then when, you know, before computers was, are we in a real thing? Probably in that, doesn't go into any detail, but I imagine it was like, are we in dreams of other people's?
Because it's like total recall. Why go on holiday when you just have the memories of going on holiday?
And then a bunch of people have taken that to like scientific levels of saying, well, what's weird is that all, when you get down to the molecular level of things and submolecular and subatomic levels of things, it's all switches and ons and offs. They become single units, and they were saying that's basically like bits and bytes and pixels in a computer. Like everything resolves down to like little individual things that they aren't analog. It becomes digital at some at its most micro level.
Really?
Reality. Okay. I mean, that's our analysis so far, that like, you know, quarks have certain states of being and they're either on or they're off. They're not like arrayed in a mass kind of thing. And so the idea is if you were designing a simulation like in a computer, that's probably the way it would look. You know, that you would have like sort of
like the Matrix.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's where they analogize. Although, you know, the Matrix is kind of funny because in the Matrix, the base reality people are plugged in and they are inside of the simulation and they don't know it. What they're proposing is that we are simulated. So there wouldn't be everybody plugged in into that big thing like they have in the
we are it. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So, all right, so it's Elon Musk.
I mean, listen, you know, it's an intriguing notion, but you know what happens when you get into this level, you get to that level and you go, you know, at this point, so what, right? I mean, like, should anything in this change? Do I feel bad? I still got to get up and get in the morning and have my eggs and, you know, meet people and do all the things I have to do in order to get by in the simulation. So what difference does it make?
I was just about to say ultimately reality is your sense of it.
Right.
There's no, because I think we always want to look at things as some sort of third party officialdom that will then sort of say, yes, this is real, this is not. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to our perception.
Which all comes around back to my whole thing of, if you've got an android and it acts like things and it's all based on your perception, what difference does it make? Like, why would I treat that differently because it's manufactured? Because, and that was another thing, another way I was thinking about this android question and like what they are is, does it really matter what they are from the inside out as it matters from the outside in? In other words,
how do we perceive it?
If we react to it, perceive it, deal with it just like we would another person, and why wouldn't we treat it like another person anyway? Like, what does it matter?
I think this is the interesting thing, because I guess we sort of come full circle to where we started. One of the hooks of the TV show Westworld is going to be how, because the hosts are artificial, how the man seems to have an inbuilt disrespect for how they're treated.
Right.
Because you can.
Right.
And so.
And then other people are obviously clearly going to be attached. I mean, one of the things, this isn't giving away a spoiler, but even within the people who run this park, it's clear there's differences of opinion of how to look at these creations. Where
yes.
Some people are looking at them more like people and interacting with them more like people, and some people are interacting with them like their equipment.
There's the one character, the Chris Hemsworth's brother who's in it,
yes.
Hemsworth is.
I thought when I saw reviews, it was a joke about him because he looked like him. No, he's actually another Hemsworth brother.
His character is the one like, look, these are the equivalent of rides in the amusement park type thing. And it's interesting, you know, to give credit, this is, you know, we in the last hour, we've talked about cloning, we've talked about Michael Crichton, you know, we mentioned Jurassic Park, where that's all about, are these things real? Are they not real? Are they created? Are they not created? What rights do they have? So on and so forth. And I think even in the original Jurassic Park, there's sort of the moment that when the animals are able, because we've covered this ground so many times, when the animals are able to procreate for themselves, right at that moment, they suddenly have a your status changes. Your status changes once again.
Not people, in that case, but they are something more than just something.
Just something that was created. So yeah. So I think that's it. Is that it for artificial intelligence?
I think it is. All right, I don't even know what we ended up talking about, but it was fun.
Yeah, it was very fun. And again, if you haven't watched Westworld, I would suggest you watch it because it is very good.
I think if you don't want to pay for it, find some friend and watch it on demand on your tablet or something like that.
Get your mother to pay for it on her cable package. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Do we have anything else this week? Next show sometime soon is going to be our summer movie scorecard.
Right.
We're also going to be doing some Bill Murray stuff coming up in the future.
So if you got anything you'd like offer on Bill Murray, send us a email or something. Maybe it's he's always getting around there, so maybe you have personal experience.
I was about to say, because Bill Murray now seems to be a personality as he is anything else.
Right.
Also, I have been very critical of everyone out there for not going to our YouTube channel. I have historically, if you listen, I just take a shot at all you listeners out there, all you avians. But our last Car Chase show, our YouTube channel has had over 50 views. So thank you for interacting with us on a multimedia level.
Yeah.
Because, we are the reality that surrounds you.
Be careful what you wish for. You might get another set of something like that.
This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.